We're standing here on what we call the overlook. We're looking out over the pebble deposit. I'm looking out. I see two of our drill rigs doing some of their work right now.
A visit to the controversial Pebble Mine site. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 3rd. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a diabetes prevention program aimed at American Indian and Alaska Native communities.
We saw a 30% decrease in diabetes-related dialysis.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
And by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
The Save Our Salmon initiative goes before voters in the Lake and Peninsula Borough tomorrow, and the information war around the proposed pebble mine that the initiative is aimed at stopping is heating up. Conservation groups are releasing ads, activists are posting online videos, and the group behind the mine, the Pebble Partnership, flew members of the media up to their mine site recently. KDLG's Daisha Eaton has the story.
If passed, the initiative would amend the borough's development permitting code and could slow down or stop the development of the Pebble Mine. I decided to go on a media tour paid for by the Pebble Partnership to see the mine site at the center of the controversial initiative for myself. My September 23rd visit included a helicopter ride around the mine site, which is located on State of Alaska land about 10 miles northwest of Iliamna Lake and 200 miles southwest of Anchorage. We land on a hill overlooking the deposit to check out a drill rig and reclaimed holes. Mike Heatwall is a spokesman for the Pebble Partnership, the organization developing the mine. As I shelter my microphone from the wind, Heatwall looks out over the horizon, describing the vast valley of rolling golden tundra over my shoulder.
We're standing here on what we call the overlook. We're looking out over the pebble deposit. I see our supply camp, which is where we store the equipment for our drilling work. And I'm looking out, I see two of our drill rigs doing some of their work right now.
The mine site is said to hold an estimated 80 billion pounds of copper, more than 100 million ounces of gold, and about 5 billion pounds of molybdenum. The claim area spans 150 miles and could become North America's largest open-pit mine. Pebble has drilled more than 1,200 exploratory core holes at the site.
How far have you drilled?
We're at 3,700 feet right now.
Bud Verzier makes $32.50 an hour drilling for Pebble as a contract worker with Quest Drilling, a Canadian company. Pointing to the tank of water, he explains how things are supposed to go.
This is water we're recirculating, though it's our drilling water.
And so what happens when you disassemble this site? What, do you just dump the water back into the ground? Or?
Well, the excess water that will be in the sumps right there, and it gets just filled in with the dirt. And then everything gets moved off the site. The reclamation crew comes in and replaces all the dirt that's pulled up, puts all the tundra back on top, and reclaims the site.
Heatwall walks me up to take a look at a reclaimed drill hole on top of the hill. All that was left of the former drill site was a capped-off tube with an orange marker. Pebble's set to release its environmental baseline documents summarizing more than $120 million in studies that will guide the development of the mine before the end of the year. That will be followed by release of the mine plan in the winter of 2012. They want people to refrain from judging the project until its release. But those opposed to the mine say they'll nearly be to the permitting stage by then, and it may be too late to stop the project from going ahead. And they allege that the exploratory drill holes are already polluting the site. A little over a week ago, an activist working for the conservation group Trout Unlimited posted a YouTube video implying the Pebble Partnership was lying about the safety of those drill holes. The YouTube video, set to the song The Setup by Zebrahead, starts out with a photo of Catherine Karskallen, the activist who made the video, beside a supposedly reclaimed drill hole at the site, oozing green and orange goo.
There's two ways to do things. You can fight things in court and it can drag on and you have to have money and pay lawyers, or you can raise public awareness, and that's what something like YouTube can do.
Karskallen claims the goo could be the beginnings of acid rock drainage, polluting water that can leak from sulfide metal mines like Pebble. Karskallen coordinates outreach for Trout Unlimited in Bristol Bay. She's a third-generation commercial fisherman and an activist against the mine. The video only had about 1,500 views when I looked at it, but that's enough to get people talking in sparsely populated Bristol Bay. And that, Karskallen explains, is her goal.
My coworker Rick and I flew up and landed on Frying Pan Lake, and our intention was to walk up to the drill rig that's closest to the lake, and we walked up on the hillside to get there, and we came across one of the reclaimed drill sites. We took pictures of what we saw, and that's what this video is.
Karskallen says she took water samples from the drill hole she visited, but they'd expired by the time they made it to the lab. I asked Karskallen if she'd sent the photos she took to the Department of Natural Resources.
At this point, I've been working to fight this mine for about 3 years and hit nothing but frustration with the agencies. And so at this point, my only purpose was for the public to see what's going on. And the agencies are included in the public, and hopefully they will see it. And if they feel compelled to take action, that would be wonderful. But we've gone to them before, and they've said that they don't have the staff to oversee what's going on there. So this seemed like a better way for people to really see.
Heat Wool with the Pebble Partnership says they're taking a look at the core hole in Karskallen's photo. No word yet on whether state agencies monitoring the site have checked it out. Earlier this month, a Superior Court judge ruled that conservation groups, including Trout Unlimited, had not provided enough evidence to prove Pebble's exploratory core holes were already polluting the site. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The question of whether to allow sales of alcohol will be on the ballot tomorrow for voters in Barrow. A yes vote would allow the first legal local liquor sales in the city in more than a decade. Barrow currently is a damp community. Sales of alcohol are banned, but people with a permit can order alcohol through a city-run distribution center that charges $25 per order. Passage of the ballot question would authorize the city to create and operate a government-run liquor store, similar to a plan approved by Kotzebue voters in 2009. A new survey shows more than 50% of women in Anchorage have been the victim of some type of sexual violence in their lifetime. The survey was conducted by the Justice Center at the University of Alaska Anchorage and led by the center's director, Dr. Andre Rose. He says in the past year, 8% of women in Anchorage experienced sexual violence.
These numbers, I think, are shockingly high and very depressing statistics. But unfortunately, they're not unexpected. We've known from a variety of data sources that our rates of violence against women were high. But most of that information in the past was based on law enforcement reports. And that only includes offenses that were reported to law enforcement. So what our survey looks at is includes all offenses, those that were reported to law enforcement and those that were not reported. And unfortunately, our statistics confirm the picture of sexual violence in Anchorage, where we have extremely high levels.
And what about statewide? How do the figures in Anchorage compare to other places within the state?
It's difficult to make direct comparisons because we may be talking about different types of assaults, and we may be talking about different types of victims and survivors. But what we can say is that the rates in the municipality of Anchorage are as high as all of the other rates that we've looked at for the statewide numbers.
And how about nationally, especially among other similar-sized cities?
The national results have not been available yet. We are expecting those by the end of the year. Our survey is modeled after the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. And so at some point later this year, we will have estimates for the nation and by state as well. And so we will at that time be able to compare and see how our rates of violence compared to those from other states. But at this point, those data are not yet available.
Now that you have these figures, how do you hope they can help? What's the plan for using this information now?
Well, I think the first part of addressing a very significant problem within our society is to acknowledge that the problem truly exists. And so I hope that these numbers establish a baseline, and I hope that these numbers convince everyone that we truly do have a problem with intimate partner violence and with sexual violence in our community. So hopefully these numbers compel people to act and to do something, to take the courage to address violence within our community.
Dr. Andre Rose is the director of UAA's Justice Center. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, recognition for a longtime Fairbanks pilot.
I arrived in Fairbanks back in 43, and it was February, and it was colder than hell.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
The federal government is upholding the 2008 oil and gas lease sale in the Chukchi Sea. The sale was challenged in court, and last year a judge required the Interior Department to complete a supplemental environmental impact statement and then decide whether to vacate the sale. Environmental groups are disappointed in the decision, saying drilling should not move forward until more is known about the Arctic Ocean environment. Shell is hoping to begin exploratory drilling in the Chukchi next summer. The company has submitted an exploration plan for its Chukchi work to the Interior Department and says today's announcement means the federal review of that plan can move forward. State legislative committees today began looking at the steps needed to cut back on the cost of prisons at the same time as maintaining a tough-on-crime reputation. The House and Senate Finance Subcommittees on Corrections heard of strategies in other states, most predominantly Texas, where State Representative Jerry Madden recalled how he was part of a bipartisan approach to prison reform. He says he was given the Corrections Department budget in 2005 with the instructions not to build new prisons. At the same time, the state projected needing space for 17,000 new prisoners within 5 years. Madden told the committees that he only saw two ways of dealing with the problem: let the prisoners out or slow down the rate at which they are imprisoned.
I look at my types of prisoners and I say, you got people that you're afraid of and people that you're mad at. People that you're afraid of, you ought to lock up. And even my liberal friends will agree, lock them up, throw away the key. Those people are dangerous, and they're dangerous to you, and they're dangerous to your society. You got to do for public safety and public protection. You got to do things with them. But for those others, we're mad at them.
As an example, Madden says drunks are dangerous and frightening, but once they have successfully completed a rehabilitation program, they are productive, non-threatening members of society. Madden pointed lawmakers to five places in which they could look for ways to control the need for more prisons. Most important was cutting back on recidivism. The committee members were told by state officials today that 40% of Alaska's prisoners will return to prison. Madden says there are other targets, too.
Certainly probation was one of those. If you catch them before they get to prison and you do things like specialty courts and you do things like providing additional support for your probation departments so that they can monitor the people and can provide help, and you can put drug treatment programs that work within your community, and you can put alcoholic treatment programs there for those people, you can keep them out of prison.
Madden pointed to incidents of prisoners who lose their parole status for technical reasons, not new criminal activity. Madden said that 5 years after beginning its reform, Texas has actually closed one prison. For the past week, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council has been meeting in Unalaska. No action there has been more controversial than the announcement that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration wants to put off the implementation of a new halibut catch share plan. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez caught up with some of the users who will be affected by the delay.
When it comes to establishing a new halibut catch sharing plan in southeast and south central Alaska, doing nothing might be almost as controversial as acting. That became clear last Wednesday when the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced that the agency wanted more time to review the plan, which would integrate the way the commercial and charter fleets are managed and change the way the catch is allocated. The request was made at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting being held in Unalaska, and opinion among the advisory panel's members was split. For some charter operators and sport fishermen, the status quo is a good thing. It keeps a rule that would have their catch from going into effect. Tim Evers represents the Deep Creek Charter Boat Association on the Kenai Peninsula. He says that many in his region are relieved that they get to keep their two fish a day limit, at least for a little while longer.
It's been difficult up to this meeting for them to book trips for next year, and then with the information that came out of this meeting, their telephones were ringing and they're booking trips.
Commercial halibut fishermen are less excited for the delay. Jeff Barber is a crew member on a longliner based out of Sitka.
I would say implement the catch share plan that was voted on 10-1 at the council and move on with it because it's been 16, 17, 18 years.
He says they've already seen their quota shrink, and they're unhappy to bear most of the burden when it comes to cuts in the halibut harvest levels. Julianne Curry is the executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association, and she says that a decision to further delay the implementation of the catch share plan is having a noticeable impact on fishermen in her region.
People already are going out of business. We have guys down in Southeast, and there's guys in 3A also who are thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt right now.
Evers of the Deep Creek Charter Boat Association says he's sympathetic to that, and that many charter boat operators understand that all sectors are going to have to see reductions in the amount of the halibut they can take if they want to conserve the resource. But he also added that sport fishermen who travel to the state to catch halibut don't fully understand how complicated resource management is in Alaska. He says that they think
that their priorities would be number one, and any other user groups kind of fall in below that. And over the years of management of the resource, they haven't really adapted to understanding about the conservation ends of it. They just want and want and want and more and more and more. So it's a difficult situation.
The many competing interests of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, and charter boat operators over a resource as limited as halibut are exactly why resolution has been such a struggle to achieve. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
A Palmer grand jury has indicted 8 people in relation to the theft of 38 handguns from a Wasilla store. Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ipson says the 8, ranging in age from 30 to a juvenile of 16, have a collective total of 146 felony charges against them.
We have a variety of charges. Some of them were actually charged with the actual burglary, and we have others that were charged with second-degree theft by receiving, meaning that they had possession of the stolen handgun.
The theft occurred September 18th at the Three Bears store on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway.
They were all semi-automatic handguns. We have recovered 22 of them, but we still have some that are unaccounted for, so we are hoping to get all of the guns back.
ATF is offering a reward of $2,500 for information leading to the recovery of the remaining guns or for information leading to others involved in the theft. Wasilla City Councilman Steve Menard is the target of a recall effort. The town's city clerk has approved an application for a recall election sponsored by members of an organization called Conservative Patriots Group. Menard, whose term ends in 2013, was in Sitka for the Alaska Municipal League meeting in August. He made headlines when he left behind a wrecked hotel room. Menard said that he has since quit drinking and has repaid the city the entire cost of the trip and the damages. He has remained on the council, although fellow council members have barred him from traveling on city business. The group must collect 201 signatures for the petition to be approved. Only residents of Wasilla may sign the petition. Diabetes is epidemic among Native Americans, and rates have continued to increase since the 1960s. At the National Indian Health Board annual conference in Anchorage last week, participants discussed ways to convince Congress to keep the special diabetes program for Indians going in an era of tight federal budgets. The $150 million program provides grants to help prevent and manage diabetes among American Indians and Alaska Natives. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
In 1963, the National Institutes of Health issued a report saying diabetes had reached epidemic proportions among Native Americans. Marvin Defoe of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa in Wisconsin says diabetes is still rampant among Native Americans.
If you go in any Native community, you ask your community how many of you know of somebody who has the disease of diabetes, and 95% of the community is going to raise their hand.
In recent years, the Special Diabetes Program for Indians has brought about $10 million a year into the Alaska Tribal Health System. The money is used for everything from salaries for health care providers, dietitians, and educators, and training for rural health care providers, to the purchase of items such as glucose testing equipment. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium manages statewide health services for Native Americans in Alaska, including the inpatient side of Alaska Native Medical Center. ANTHC Community Health Services Director Dr. Jay Butler says diabetes is caused when the body doesn't produce enough insulin, or the insulin doesn't act to bring blood sugar down to healthy levels.
Over the years, as the blood sugar remains high, it begins to damage some of the small vessels in the body, and we see that manifest then as kidney problems, heart problems, problems with vision, all through the body, where it's really critical that tissue have small vessels feeding blood to those areas, the tissue can begin to not function as well.
South Central Foundation manages the outpatient side of Alaska Native Medical Center and provides health services to Native American people living in South Central Alaska and 60 rural villages. Lori Weiss is SCF Health Education Manager. She says they use Special Diabetes Program for Indians funds to teach people ways to avoid diabetes and its complications, for instance, by making healthy choices about diet and exercise, and by monitoring their blood sugar levels. Weiss says they're seeing positive results.
They have made tremendous strides in their health. For many of them, they've been able to get off of some of the medications they were on for diabetes. For a lot of them, they've been able to get off some of the blood pressure medications. They just improved their health tremendously just by adding exercise into their lives. So, lots of positives from both the education and the exercise program, too.
Gail Marshall of the American Diabetes Association is a member of the Oklahoma Choctaw Nation. She says the program has saved lives and saved money by preventing diabetes-related complications.
In about the same time, 10-year period of the Special Diabetes Program for Indian funding, we saw a 30% decrease in diabetes-related dialysis. When it is in all of the research and in all of the studies, all the other populations, we're seeing an increase.
Marshall says the nation's economic climate may make it hard to maintain the Special Diabetes Program for Indians, despite its successes. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
An Alaska aviation legend is being honored for a lifetime of service. A new east ramp entrance at Fairbanks Airport was recently dedicated to Cliff Everetts. And as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the longtime Fairbanks pilot got special recognition again last week.
89-year-old Cliff Everts was presented with a plaque from the U.S. House of Representatives at a Fairbanks Rotary Club luncheon. Representative Don Young took to the microphone, reading from a speech he recently delivered on the House floor, recounting Everts' long career as a pilot, primarily for Wien Air.
Wien was lucky to keep Mr. Everts as one of their team until 1980, when he retired after 35 years and 30,000 hours in a cockpit. Mr. Everts has flown in 40 below temperatures through dark days and nights, in snow, sleet, and rain to supply the needs of villages. He's a true Alaskan with frontier spirit.
Cliff Everts earned his pilot's license in New York at the age of 16, and at 20 came to Alaska to take a job with Alaska Star Airlines, the predecessor to Alaska Airlines.
I arrived in Fairbanks back in 43, and it was February, and it was colder than hell, and 40 below, and all the sewers were frozen up, and I didn't know whether I was going to hang around here very long.
Everts did, flying with Alaska Star, Wien, and later his own company, Everts Air Cargo. Everts says flying in Alaska was always exciting. He recounts an early Wien flight to Umiat when the weather closed in and they were forced to wait it out at Chandelier Lake.
It was quite an experience living in one of these sod huts covered with caribou skins and 30, 40 below zero. We stayed overnight and they had a little battery radio, and they were playing the Hit Parade in Los Angeles. And that was when I was wondering what the hell I was doing up here, a young fellow like me, being in an Eskimo hut.
Everts worked on some unusual enterprises, like flying reindeer to the lower 48 and an unlikely venture with a Kotzebue businessman.
He had just gotten an ice cream machine, and you, all you do is mix water with the powder, and you have ice cream. So I was making the mail run out of Kotzebue to Barrow via Point Hope and Wainwright, and so I sold ice cream to the Eskimos.
Everts says flying Alaska in the days before GPS and other electronics was all about knowing the country. Everts had a number of accidents, but always returned to the air. He no longer flies, but still goes into the Everts office in Fairbanks daily. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Dillingham, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Ellen Lockyer and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits. From research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production, Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. Since 1985, the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks has distributed critical information on drug awareness to children, parents, and teachers, and your local Elks Lodge has supported youth-related activities providing direction and focus in a child's life. Make a difference. Contact your local Elks Lodge today. To find the nearest lodge, go online to elks.org. Elks care, Elks share. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Elks Association. October 4th is Regional Educational Attendance Area Education Day. Polls are open 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., and when you go vote, bring identification. If your name is not on the register, you may vote a question ballot. The information you provide on the question ballot envelope is used to update your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring a person of your choice to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.